Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Runner's World Podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Jane Maguire, the deputy digital editor. Jane, what's coming up on this week's episode?
So this week we are talking to the amazing Sarah Morwood. Sarah is an ultra runner who recently won the South Downs Way 100 after recovering from two pretty career-threatening accidents. We'll be speaking about her and her amazing journey back into running and what it takes to succeed at 100-mile races. We also have the Runner's World chief sub-editor John Carroll, who's coming in to discuss why he thinks, actually, we probably weren't born to run.
Heresy! That sounds good, Jane. What else have you been up to then this week?
So I am week three now of Berlin training.
Right.
Which feels very, I don't know, it took me a week to kind of get my head around starting again.
And this is the sub-4 plan.
Sub-4 plan.
Yeah.
So last week I was in Cornwall and did some very hilly miles.
Yeah.
Who knew Cornwall was so hilly?
Yeah.
Which was fun, actually. I'm definitely a pavement runner. So
okay.
It takes a lot to kind of drag me onto the trail.
Yeah.
But kind of accidentally ended up on the trail.
And how long were you running on the weekend then?
So I had 10 on the plan.
Okay.
And I managed 8
but
before
eight,
the hills.
8 hilly is 10 flat. Everyone knows
that's
that.
That's why I did that math. Because after eight hilly, horrible miles, or not horrible, hilly, beautiful miles, I was like, this is why I'm a road runner. And I gave up. But I think it's good to admit defeat, right?
Fair enough. I think there's still a good shift. And this is, you're working with a coach now.
Yes, he's called Lewis and he's from New Levels Coaching, so shout out to Lewis. And it's great. It's really different because with London, I think I spoke about how I trained with my watch.
Yeah.
And this time it's kind of obviously training with a human, which is nice in some ways because you can kind of explain to a human, I'm not feeling that well, I'm going to do this, isn't this?
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm apprehensive, but I think it's just, I don't know, I'm having that classic, like, the beginning of a training plan and you're a bit like, oh, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be good.
I'm sure you'll be fine. I'm sure you'll be fine.
What about you? What have you been up to?
I had this quite interesting Friday night. So I decided to, partly to celebrate summer solstice and partly because I've got this 100-miler coming up where I'm going to be running through the night. So I was like, I need to know what it's like to run through the night to the morning.
Okay.
And it's like, it's never going to be easier because sunrise was at, I think, 4:45.
Yeah, early, isn't
it? It's pretty early. So I headed off with a mate called Rich, and we started running in Wimbledon at about midnight.
Mm-hmm.
You get a few weird looks with your kind of like head torch on as people are just coming sort of out of the pub. And went over to Wimbledon Common, lots of rabbits at Wimbledon Common.
Yeah.
Through Richmond Park to lots of deer, and actually a couple of people, slightly strange people walking around alone. But
oh, really?
I probably look strange as well to them.
Yeah, I mean.
It was interesting. I hadn't done a lot of night running before, and when you see the sort of night give way to the dawn, it is actually very, very uplifting, actually,
yeah.
And very energising. So it was quite.
Did you get a great sunrise pic?
No. So we were like, oh, I can't wait to sunrise, get to Brockwell Park. It's going to be an amazing sunrise because it's a great view out of looking out of South London. And It was just cloudy.
Yeah, I've never, every kind of time, you know, when you're like, oh, I'm going to go here and I'm going to watch this amazing sunrise. Never happens, does it?
No.
Just gets lighter.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like,
yeah.
Well, right, great, cool. I'm up for no reason.
Yeah, it's now 5 a.m. I better go
home. Like, cool, great.
Yeah, be interested to know what listeners have to say about nighttime running. Have you done it? Do you like it? Is it like your idea of hell? Let us know. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
If ultra running is about never giving up, then Sarah Moorwood is the embodiment of that sentiment. Recovering from not one, but two career-threatening injuries, she returned to winning ways earlier this month with victory at the South Downs Way 100. In addition to her running, Sarah is a full-time doctor and says running has been key in maintaining and improving her mental health. If we could start then, Sarah, with, like, it's been a rocky road, hasn't it? There's been sort of not one, but two really bad accidents that you've been in. Could you kind of talk us through the nature of those and kind of, yeah, what injuries you suffered as a result?
Yeah, so the first one was 2016, just at the beginning of the year, so the end of January. I was out cycling on my road bike. I was cross-training because I had some pain in the other knee. And a car pulled out in front of me as I was cycling down the road. I must have been doing about 25 miles an hour on my road bike, and I hit her bonnet and flipped over, landed in the road on the other side, right on my kneecap, which smashed into lots of pieces. And I had to go into I was taken in as an emergency, and I had to have an operation the next day on it. They were quite pessimistic, the surgeons who operated on it, because it was in so many bits. So they took a bit of it out, and they sort of wound together the other bits that they could.
Yeah.
And there's been long weight bearing on it for 6 weeks. And just before the 6 weeks were up, I tripped over while I was walking into work on my crutches because of the long weight bearing, and I refractured it.
Oh, God.
So then I had to have a second operation to fix it again.
Yeah.
So in total, I was non weight bearing on that leg for about 4 months in the end.
And then you sort of came back from it, didn't you? And you won a race, and it was that in itself was a great story. And then another accident happened. Is that right?
Yeah. So I spent a long time rehabbing from the knee injury, and then I got back to full fitness after I had the metal workout. And yeah, things were going much, much better than they could have anticipated. And then at the end of last year, I was driving home from a night shift, and it's assumed that I fell asleep at the wheel because no one actually saw what happened. They found me crashed into a tree in my car. I'm a junior doctor, and I've done a night shift in ED, and they can only assume that's what happened. And
yeah.
I fractured my spine, and I had a subarachnoid hemorrhage that bleeds on my brain as well.
Wow.
So I had to have surgery on my spine to fix that. So that took me out again.
And how did you feel in the aftermath of kind of both events? Were you worried that you might never run again?
Yeah, well, the first one was because I didn't have any head injuries or anything in the first one, and the surgeons are very pessimistic because your knee function is quite dependent on your patella, and they were very pessimistic, like, you probably won't be able to run and compete on that because it was so badly damaged. And that made me just feel awful. And I had because that was the year after I'd done the world championships as part of the GB team, so I had lots of plans of how I was going to try and re-qualify for the team again that year, and then other races I'd wanted to do, and so they were all just shattered. The second injury, I don't have a lot of memory of, to be honest. It was 8 months ago now, and I had, because of my head injury, I've lost about a month's worth of memories. So the rehab from that was a sort of slower, foggier process.
Yeah.
And actually this time, with the spinal fracture, the surgeons were actually a lot more optimistic about running. They said, we don't know when you will be able to, but it certainly shouldn't stop you from being able to. So they were a bit more positive in what they thought I'd be able to manage.
How did you kind of stay positive mentally, Sarah? I mean, particularly in the kind of face of those kind of diagnoses where someone says, like, you may never run again, because I know what running means to you. Like, it's kind of, it must have been tricky to stay positive about that.
Yeah, the first time with a knee injury, I wasn't very positive at all to start with. Sort of shut the curtains, wouldn't see anybody, wouldn't go outside, because it was just, I'd go outside and I was like, I want to go running on that road, yeah. I can't even look at it. But then I started to focus on all of the little things from day to day that you're then having to relearn to do. So learning to just get around the house on crutches, learning to dress yourself and go to the loo, and all the sort of simple things, or learn to carry a cup of tea around the house when you haven't got any hands. I think I focused on all those small improvements, and I was writing a blog as I was doing it. Mm. And every single blog I'd focus on the small improvements I'd made and the small things I'd conquered. And I think that was a really good way of staying positive. And then through my rehab, of regaining function in my leg and regaining things with running that I didn't think I'd be able to do, it was a way to just keep a positive mindset and not find myself dwelling in misery about what had happened.
Yeah.
With a spine injury, it's been a bit different, because the head injury also results in you having quite a lot of mood issues as well. So I had quite a lot of problems with depression and anxiety following my head injury, and not having the running to help deal with those, it was quite hard. But I'm lucky to have a lot of very supportive friends and family around, so they helped me through that.
Yeah.
And what did you, if anything, kind of learn through this? Has it changed the way you train now?
Yeah. So after my knee injury, I went and signed up with a coach, James Elson from Centurion Running.
Yeah.
He helped me an awful lot. Initially, just getting back on my legs and learning how to run again when I'd just been going out and running 100-mile races easily. The concept of just going out and doing 5K seems a bit strange. So he guided me through that and also stopped me from doing too much. Because I used to just sign up things left, right and centre because I love racing and I like doing routes that people plan for you and you know how to think about it. And then he helped me to sort of guide what to enter so that you don't end up completely breaking yourself doing too much. I've done a lot more strength and conditioning since my knee fracture, and that's helped with my spinal fracture as well.
So that's kind of what it like lifting weights in the gym, core work, or what kind of nature of the training is that?
A bit of everything, to be honest. So initially, started with the knee and with the back, just starting off with no weights and just using your own body weight, just doing things like planks and bridges, and then gradually adding in a bit of weight. I've just started using weights in the gym again with my back, and I did previously with my knees, so doing squats, doing lunges, and then trying to force myself to do a lot of stretching and foam rolling
right,
too.
Yeah.
And that's always the lazy
worst
bit
part.
At the end. But I think that's probably enabled me to get a lot more out of my knee than I would have done otherwise if I hadn't done that strength work.
Yeah, I'm sure. I guess one thing that often comes up with people who have experienced terrible injuries and come back is that they feel kind of new gratitude for running. Do you feel like you kind of savour it at more than you ever did?
Yeah, sometimes. There's always bad bits. So
yeah.
Even when you're coming back, you still sometimes find yourself thinking, oh, I hate this, why am I doing this? But there's definitely been points in races where I thought, oh, God, I feel awful. I can't put one foot in front of the other. And then you think, well, I might not have been able to, so I might as well make the best of this because it was what I wanted. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to. So, it's definitely helped at times.
And I think you've spoken quite a lot about how running has helped you manage your depression and mental health, and kind of how big a motivating factor is that for you?
It's pretty big, really. I suppose I'm sort of almost dependent on endorphins from running to sort of self-manage depression. And without it, I find myself getting quite low quite quickly. And also the participation in races, going out meeting other people. All my friends are trail runners, so if I see people, it's always part of running, and that community is very supportive as well, and that helps you to then manage any mental health problems as well. So it's a big sort of comfort blanket around me, the running and the community, that it's always there to fall back on no matter how bad things get. It also forces you to go outside, and actually after my spinal injury I couldn't really walk very much and spent a lot of time inside, and sometimes just going outside and sitting in the garden and just getting fresh air. It's a massive difference. So going out for a run, you're just getting daylight and fresh air. It really helps your mood.
Yeah, I'm sure that, and I think there's a lot of science to back that up as well. Definitely getting outside and what it does to your mental health. This story has a happy ending, or it's certainly looking good now, Sarah, because you won the South Downs Way 100 earlier this month.
Yeah.
How did that feel? That must have felt incredible.
It just felt a bit sort of unreal, really. I always have pain when I'm running, but I always have pain when I'm not running now as well, so it doesn't really make any difference whether I run or not. It's gonna hurt. So while I was running, I was just like, I just feel normal, really. It was lovely. And there's this bit of me who 8 months ago was thinking I won't put one foot in front of the other ever again, and here I am just getting towards the end of the South Down. And then I did it in the same time I had done prior to my accident too, and it just didn't really feel real.
Yeah.
It was very strange, and it was just wonderful, really.
Yeah.
It's just amazing what your body can do when you work with it rather than against it, and let it do things it wants to rather than force it into situations it shouldn't be in.
So what advice, as someone who couldn't even think about running any more than 26.2, that's it, done, finish, what would your advice be for someone who's kind of looking to kind of go from marathon to ultra marathon kind of distance?
build the distance up slowly. So don't just sort of throw yourself into 100 miles after a 20. Just sort of gradually get your legs used to running more frequently, longer distances. So a lot of people do the back-to-back runs, a sort of 21 day, 20 the next. And that way you're just adding up volume. And don't neglect the strength and conditioning, because I swear one of the reasons that all my injuries have been inflicted rather than running injuries.
Yeah.
And I think it's not just luck. I think it's partly because I do all the strength and conditioning work. It just protects your joints and protects your tendons and just gives you that strength you need, or physical strength, to get to the end of the race.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And also enjoy it, because I think people get fixated on finishing and think it's got to be at the expense of everything, but it's just fun.
Yeah.
You've got to enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it, you won't get to the end, because your brain will stop you.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking that you've often run without a watch, so, and you don't stress about that stuff too much?
Yeah. This South Downs is the first time I've ever run with a watch, and it wasn't set up to run... It wasn't set at the GPS, it was just so I knew what time of day it was.
Right.
The first time I've ever done that. Usually I don't know what time it is, I don't know how far I've gone. I do it all based on effort. And I much prefer that. I don't like to know what time. One of the reasons I like doing long distances is because I don't like to know where I am or what's going on.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's what,
I like the oblivion.
Sophie Power said to me that the reason she got into ultras was because, well, you know, when you finish a marathon, everyone's like, what time did you do? Whereas no one asks that after an ultra. You're like, well done.
No.
Oh, my God, you're incredible.
The oblivion side of ultra running is lovely. If you don't focus on the distance or the time, it's almost hypnotic. Mm. Great.
I think there's a bit of a pattern among kind of vets and doctors being really good ultramarathoners. There's lots and lots of examples, and you're obviously part of that. Do you think there's anything about the kind of the mental and physical demands of that job that makes you kind of well suited to the rigours of an ultramarathon?
Well, I assume it's good. I mean, we all do night shifts, which I suppose sets you up for getting used to going through the night. And I suppose in this country, I'm not sure so much about others, but I suppose it's the same everywhere, this sort of the high competitive nature of getting into medical school and getting through the training. It attracts that kind of person who wants to push themselves. So I suppose those are the aspects of being in medicine that favour ultramarathon runners. And there's the being on your feet all day thing as well, in hospital and walking a long way.
How hard is it juggling, obviously, being a doctor is not a normal 9-to-5 in any way. How hard is it to kind of juggle training around work?
I think it probably makes it easier. I'm quite fortunate now in that I work less than full-time, so I don't work full-time hours anymore. And initially that was because I was in the GB teams, the trail championships in 2018. And then since my car accident, I haven't gone back full-time yet, because I find that I need time off my feet at a certain length of time to let my back recover. But prior to that, I did all my initial training during my foundation years as a full-time doctor. And I think shift work, in a way, makes it easier. Mm. Because, like, one of our twilight shifts, for example, is 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 1 o'clock in the morning. So you've got the whole day to go for a run. And particularly during the winter, that's quite nice. It gives you a few more hours to get things done. And you don't have to do all your running in the dark. So I think it makes juggling for ultra running slightly easier with the shift patterns.
Yeah, I guess that's a positive way of looking at it.
Such a good way of looking at it.
Well, volume-wise, I know it can be tricky, but I was lucky where I lived previously, I was lucky to have a distance from work to home that I could run. So you just end up learning how to combine commuting and running.
You must be logging big miles then, Sarah, to sort of do what you do over that kind of ultra-marathon distance. What does a week look like for you?
It's quite variable depending on sort of where in a training block I am. I never used to think like this in terms of training blocks until I started having the coaching from James. But you know, sort of the middle of to the peak phase of a training block, I'll be sort of hitting 60 or 70 miles a week. So not really that high volumes. I mean, I know some ultra runners who cover over 100 miles a week.
Yeah.
But I don't think it needs to be done. I think if you get the training pattern right, you can get away with a lot less mileage, and I think that probably suits people who have quite busy lives as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think people are put off by the idea of, oh my God, I've got to run over 100 miles a week. Well, you really don't.
Mm.
It can be done. So yeah, don't be put off by that.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you're talking about you're being competitive, you're winning these things on 60 and 70. I guess if you were completing, you could probably get away with, and they were the right miles, you might be able to get away with more like 40 to 50 perhaps.
Yeah, I think if you do it right, you can, less can be more if you just get the pattern right.
Yeah.
And I think if you end up just flogging long distances, either you'll end up hating it and you won't want to compete, or you'll just break something. So it's worth just playing with the shorter distances and getting the pattern right.
You're making it sound incredibly easy. I don't believe it is.
Well, I suppose it was easy. I don't suppose we'd do it. Although I do sometimes think that one of the reasons I like ultra running is because you don't have to get out of breath, and I quite like that. Don't ask me to climb the stairs fast. That makes me breathless. I don't enjoy that.
So what are your plans for the rest of 2019 and beyond, I guess?
I haven't really thought, because I wasn't sure if my back was going to manage this distance. Mm. So I haven't... I've been erring on the pessimistic side and thinking I won't be able to manage it, so I didn't end up disappointed. Now I know I can, and I've got a place in the 24-hour squad for GB this year.
Right,
cool.
So everything now will be geared towards getting fit and my best performance in October at the 24-hour championships.
Would that be your first 24-hour? It'll be a debut for you over that
time.
Will that be a debut for you, though, the 24-hour?
No, because you have to do a 24-hour race to qualify.
Ah, okay. Right.
So I've done one previously prior to my knee fracture, and then I did one actually 2 weeks before my car crash.
Right.
That was my last 24-hour race. So I've covered the required distance, but I wasn't happy with either of my performances. So I'll be really focusing on being a bit prouder of what I can achieve over that sort of format of racing.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, I'm not really sure. I just want to enjoy running at the moment. I really am. I think what you said about, you know, this newfound respect for the fact that you can do it, that hasn't gone yet. I don't know if it'll ever fade away, and it's probably just been potentiated by the fact I've had another accident and come back again.
Yeah. So, it's extraordinary, Sarah, what you've done. I think it's an amazing sort of comeback story. So thanks very much for sharing that with us on the Runners World podcast. And wish you the best of luck with all your running in the future.
Thank you very much. That's really kind of you.
All right. Cheers, Sarah. Thanks a lot.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Wow. She was great.
No, she's amazing, isn't she? She's amazing, yeah. It's something about ultra running. They're just an amazing amount of humble.
I think they're my people.
Yeah.
I think they are. I think I've found my tribe.
You have to do an ultra marathon, James.
Yeah, I can't say that yet, can I? Give me time.
Sarah said off mic then, she's very, very happy for anyone who is going through a spinal injury or knee issue to contact her via Instagram or Facebook. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. But she's very, very happy to share her experience with you if you think that would be of use. So thanks again to Sarah for coming on. What an amazing person.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
I'll do a quick bit of running news then. A couple of bits of running have caught my eye. So Paul Tierney ran a new Wainwright's record, covering all 214 Alfred Wainwright peaks in the Lake District in 6 days, 6 hours and 5 minutes.
Insane.
He covered roughly 318 miles and scaled the equivalent ascent of four times Mount Everest. Kudos to Paul.
Just mad.
Yeah.
Just absolutely mad.
Yeah, just staggering. I think the record had stood for about 10 years. So, like, really amazing achievement from Paul. So, shout out to Paul. And then in other mountain running news, Damien Hall, who's been on the podcast before, recently ran a new FKT, fastest known time, for the Paddy Buckley round in Wales. And Damien writes about the round in the current issue of Runner's World. So take a look out for that. Yeah, incredible. Damien's one of these sort of people who's so modest that you forget how brilliant he is as a runner. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. We've also received an email from one of our listeners, which I think you will enjoy,
yeah,
who has responded to last week's question about running on holiday.
Okay.
Rob Mager, I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, writes, I always take my road shoes abroad. Like your presenter said, it's a great way to learn about a new area. My most successful run was from Venice Beach to Santa Monica last summer. I got chatting to a fellow runner, David, halfway along the route, and who turned out to be the guy who directed Shrek 2. A thoroughly decent bloke who runs every day.
There you go.
So there you go. Take your shoes away with you.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
While there's plenty of literature suggesting we were born to run, Runner's World chief sub-editor John Carroll isn't so sure. In his recent article for the Runner's World website, John looks at the various design flaws that suggest we are, in fact, born to loaf. To defend his position, John is here with us now. John, what do you mean we're not born to run?
Well, first off, I'm not defending my position. I'm merely stating my position. I have nothing to defend.
Okay.
I spent many minutes researching this topic. And what I decided is that we are nowhere in the rankings compared with the tireless wolf, for example, the lethal cheetah, or even the sad, sad camel. We're hopeless.
So compared to the other kind of the animal kingdom, we're useless runners, this is what you're saying?
Well, yes, and also there's the proposition that's been put forward in the last 20 or 30 years that we were evolutionarily designed to be ideal runners, long-distance runners. And the evidence suggests to me the exact opposite. Let's start with the nails, the toenails. What happens to toenails? They go black, they fall off, they regrow, they go black, they fall. You know where this is going.
Yeah.
Right? So what do? You clip them. What if you're an older person for whom bending over is a troubling episode?
Right.
What do you do then? Let them grow. They tear your best silk socks and you're back where you started.
Go on, carry on.
Let's skip past the feet, and there are many tiny, tiny, easily breakable bones, and move on to the Achilles tendon. A sturdy fellow,
yeah,
I'll grant you, but such a poor blood supply that the average injury takes, I think, 15 years, give or take, to heal.
So we've covered the foot.
I was working upward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worryingly. Yeah. Carry on.
I'll jump over certain parts.
Sure.
Let's move on to the, well, we won't even go into shin splints, those monsters.
Okay.
The knees, supposed to absorb, they're essentially, they're like a suspension of an East German Trabant. They're an awful creation. And then my biggest bugbear, the glutes. These were mentioned specifically by Lieberman in his 2004 study, saying they are part of the proof that we were, in fact, designed as long-distance runners. Who uses their glutes running? They're notoriously hard to fire.
Yes, that's true.
That's true.
But they're super sitting on.
Yes.
So,
but the two are related, though, aren't they? It's through our kind of our sitting that makes them hard to fire. Do you see what I'm saying? If you're a postman, I reckon you'd be firing your glutes if you were a postman.
I wouldn't ask a postman that question. I find that very personal.
Well, carry on then.
If we move on, we can move past the issue of stomach troubles, and we can go to the lungs, which are not bad, I suppose. Mm. Then you get to those tiny little airways we have to take in air.
Well, the nostrils.
Yeah. So you're left, gaping with your mouth open, and you're taking in wasps and bees and flies and all manner of detritus. Just to get some air into your lungs.
Yeah. Anything else, John?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Let's think about feeding.
Feeding, sure.
You're running. You run low because your glycogen's gone.
Yeah.
So what do? You start converting to burning your fat.
Yeah.
Which is like your car running out of petrol and you decide, I know, I'll pack it full of crude oil and molasses. That'll be fine. I'll be up and running in seconds. Of course not. It takes far longer to process the fat into energy. So we're no good there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. There is some fueling, although, of course, there's that kind of...
You don't see wolves stopping for a snack, do you?
Well, I wonder if they're kind of doing this kind of very trendy, high-fat,
keto.
High-protein.
They do a high-protein diet, that's for damn sure. I think we know that.
Yeah. Well, what about the way it makes us feel, though, John? I understand that we're not physically perhaps the best of the runners, but it makes us feel great.
This is running's most insidious trick, all right? Because you run, you hurt eventually,
yeah.
But you get those hidden endorphins and you go, oh, that felt grand. I'll run again.
Yeah.
What happens? More sore. Injuries.
Yeah.
Pain. And do I need to mention chafing? I think I don't.
I once took part in the man versus horse marathon.
Well done.
And I beat a few horses. Mm-hmm. Actually, I beat most horses. Was beaten by some horses, granted. But a few old mares I got the better of because it was a warm day. And as Jane was saying, we can cool down better than other animals. So actually...
Smart.
You know, we're not bad, actually.
Have you ever gone up against an ostrich?
Or a bear? They're quick, aren't they?
That is a loophole in race. A race director should come who's out there should do man versus ostrich.
Because an ostrich can go on 50 miles an hour and could probably run a marathon in 45 minutes.
Could it be trusted to run alongside men and women? They're quite aggro, aren't they, the ostrich?
I'd hope so,
Yeah, you may have a point, John. You may have a point. Does being bad at running, though, detract from your enjoyment of it? Do you mind?
Heavens no, look at me. I'm a prime example. You need no more evidence than myself to prove that we were not designed for running. And yet I do.
Yeah.
Like it very much.
Yeah. I think you're a good example of someone who isn't particularly competitive with running, but still...
That's not out of choice.
That's making a virtue
that's
necessity.
A necessity.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be interested to know what our listeners have to think. Do you think we are born to run? Or are we just kidding ourselves? Let us know at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. Thanks so much for coming on the Runners World podcast for the first time, John. Hopefully not the last.
Definitely not the last. I hope to come back with many more controversial theories in the months and years to come.
This is the Runners World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guest, Sarah Morwood, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews and much more, head to runnersworld.com/UK. And please like and subscribe on iTunes. And thank you to Acast, who are our hosting partner. Thank you for listening and we'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.